The beginning of Torah, I want to take up an issue which is very interesting. It's based upon a question was presented to me on the basis of a Rashi, which to the question it seems to be difficult, and to me it seems to be a problem, and I think when you hear it, you'll agree that it's a problem. At the beginning of Toldos, it mentions that Yitzchak, the marriage of Yitzchak to Rivka. Then in Pasuk Chavalov it says, Vayeta Yitzchak Lar Hashem Lenochach Ishtel. And Yitzchak was as follows. Now the term Vayeta implies something additional. He implored more than just an ordinary tefillah, but a very powerful type of tefillah which implored God. Opposite his wife, which means, again, plain shot is for the sake of his wife. Rashi says it means that Rashi is learning in terms of the measure. She was in one corner and he was in the other corner. You have to bear in mind that there's a difference. I'm having to be pointing this out a great deal. There's a difference between a medrash and the plain meaning of the text. You always have to deal with the plain meaning of the text. You can't just negate it. Kiakarahi, because she was bound. Okay, so he was inspired that she should be able to conceive a child. Vayayasa Allah Adashem, and God was, so to speak, implored to him, Allah. Vata Rivka Ishtel, and she conceived. Now, if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi points out on the word Vayayasa Allah. So Rashi, following his basic approach, that they both were praying, so then why would the pasuk indicate that God answered him? Now again, that's not the plain meaning of the text. Realize. It's not the plain meaning of the text that he was praying and God answered him makes sense. According to the Medrash, however, the implication is that she was doing a false too, which makes sense. And according to, there's an implication over here that God, that the answer was to him. Okay? Below law. But not to her. In Doma, Tzilos Tzadik Ben Russia, but Tzilos Tzadik Ben Tzadik. Because you can't compare the Tzilos of a Tzadik, a righteous person who is the son of a wicked person, in this case it's the daughter, but that's just a generic expression, the child. Tzadik who's the child of a Russia, to the Tzilos of a Tzadik who is Ben Tzadik. Lefichach lo v'lo lo. So that's the idea that Rashi is saying that his tefillah was answered because he is a tzaddik, a righteous person who was the child of a tzaddik as far as Avraham. And she is a tzaddikis, Rivka, but her father was a Rasha. So the tefillah of a tzaddik, same tzaddik is superior to that of a tzaddik and Rasha. That would be Rashi. Now what is the problem? I think if we analyze this, then there's many problems. The heart of the problem, you can attack this from many angles. Even without the Chazal, though. Of course, that's one of the questions. That seems to go completely counter to what the rabbis say. But even without that, I think the idea itself is very problematic. When you study a Rashi or any kind of a commentary, you have to analyze it. It has to make sense to you, and you have to point out the problem. But first of all, what difference does it... Why are we so concerned about lineage over here? Yes. I know it's a big deal in the world today, but how important is it? In other words, is it important or isn't it important? Is it the approach rationally? Obviously it's important. But, well, we have to understand what the importance is. At first glance, it's problematic. I'm interested in the person. Is the person a target or the person is a Russian? Right? If a person is a target, they're a target. I don't believe that God judges each person on the merit. Right? A person is judged on their merit. And what difference does it make? If the person is a tzaddik, then they should be related to one a certain way. The fact that their parent was a Russia, why should that take away? If anything, as Laurie points out, it should, first of all, as I'm saying, there shouldn't be any difference. A tzaddik is a tzaddik. Who cares where you come from? Secondly, if you're going to make distinctions, if you can introduce the relevance of a background, then it would seem it should come out just the opposite. All the indications would indicate, one second, Absolutely. No one should think when it says that that God will avenge to the 34th generation. That's talking only when they've maintained the way of the parents. Okay, of course that raises another question. If that's the case, of course they deserve to be punished. But that is a separate issue. But nowhere do we find that righteous people are punished for other people's sins. Okay? Now, over here, I just want to make the question even stronger, to bring out all the issues. For example, the Rambam in Hilchos Mamon, he talks about certain categories of people that were obligated to destroy. And you don't have the ordinary requirements of the Bezdin and the trial and so forth. Now the Rambam says that certain categories of Jews, Apikursim, and those who deny the system and those who try to take the Jews away from the Temple of Torah and so forth, he said that a public tofer, somebody was trying to destroy Yadis in a public kind of way, affecting other people. He says that all these people are not part of Klal Yisrael, and they do not require witnesses or warning or judges. And he says whoever kills them has done a mitzvah gedola. It's a big mitzvah to destroy these people. Interesting phenomenon. In other words, this would apply today, would apply in our time today. The Rambam and the Pirush HaMishnayos indicates that that was the practice in his time. There was such a phenomenon that wherever possible, when there were wicked people of Israel who were in a position to mislead other people and take them away from the path of Torah, then they would be subject to a hit squad, so to speak. They could be killed. Now, today it would apply to big leaders of conservative or reform movement that are extremely influential, and they're just going around trying to destroy Torah, to take people away from the true ideas of Torah. It's not an effect, frankly. The Rambam is really saying that it would be mutter to do it if you could do it. Then he makes a point, though. He makes a very important modification. And he says that all that we're talking about, all this applies to an individual who, through his own choice, has chosen to go away from the truth of Torah, and he's embraced the false doctrine because of his own personal corruption. But what about children who are raised? In other words, this does not apply to those who have been raised, to parents that have the wrong ideas, send them to a reform school, whatever the case may be. They were raised with these ideas from youth. For them, it's just the opposite. Then we have to have tremendous compassion and to try and teach them and so forth, because it is not their fault. In other words, the Rambam is paying credence to the tremendous effect that the upbringing, the parental upbringing and the schooling and the societal and all of that has upon an individual. So therefore, he's only holding people to account who presumably had the proper training, education, and because of their own corruption, they know the truth, but they deviate from the truth. They're wicked people, and they are worthy of destruction. But those who have been raised in this type of schooling, that's the way they've been trained from youth, you can't hold them responsible. Now, all this goes to show, I'm only mentioning this because, if anything, this would indicate that somebody who was raised in the house of a wicked person and was given that type of a training and was able to separate themselves, to give up the influence of upbringing and education and all they had were evil role models, and to depart from that and to adopt the ways of righteousness, that person would seem to be on the highest possible level. So, if anything, the more you think about it, a tzaddik, someone who's a righteous person who comes from a wicked family and background, that person, it would seem to me, is more deserving, is on a higher level from this Rambam as well. Because we have the statement of Chazal that Lori mentioned, that in the place where the Baal Tshuva, who is really, see, we, I don't know if our values are really in line with the truth. Of course, there is a certain tendency and the Jewish people not to accord great respect to a convert. Okay, let's talk about a convert. I'm talking about a genuine convert. There obviously they have a big problem because many people don't give up for the proper reasons. So you have a problem. Ulterior motives. But in terms of a situation of a geir tzedek, a righteous convert, who is truly on a higher level? Well, let's just take the Baal Tshuva, the Jewish Baal Tshuva. Who's on a higher level? A Baal Tshuva or someone who is raised from youth in an Orthodox home? Orthodox parents, sent to yeshiva. The only society that they've ever been part of is Orthodox, and that person's Orthodox. Now, the person that comes from the Midwest somewhere, or whatever, I don't know. And public school, a totally different environment, mingled with Jews, non-Jews, you know, free lifestyle, and knew very little about Judaism, and whatever the reasons may be, they discovered something, they read something, heard a speech, went to school one time, and they had to make complete changes in their entire way of thinking, give up all their friends and everything, and adopted the Torah way of life and became a Baal Tshuva. So who's on a higher level? Who would you say is on a higher level? Yeah, we're not in a higher level. How much credit do we really deserve? If you think about it honestly, by and large, religious people tend to be a little bit egotistical about it, and they feel superior, especially to non-religious. It's a very common phenomenon. But they're making a big mistake. They're attributing the level that they've reached to themselves. That's always a dangerous thing to do. Even if a person has achieved something, it's okay to have legitimate pride in your achievement. But you should always, I think in many cases, the person should take more pride than, more credit than is warranted, and you sort of like block out the other influences in your life. That's why when a person goes through a change, when he's on the way up and he needs help from people, he's always extremely solicitous and pleased. You don't realize how important what you're going to do for me is. He gives tremendous credit in that frame of mind. Then he's made it to the top, and now he's feeling like a tremendous success, and people aren't giving him credit. Don't mention, you know, when he talks about his climb to greatness, he'll emphasize what he is. And all of a sudden, the external influences begin to say, one second, but didn't that other person come in and help you at that time, and you would yeah, it's true, but I would have found another way. No. Of course, at the time you needed the help, there was no other way. You see, there's a change in the psyche. But that's true, I think, in terms of religious people in general should be aware of it. They tend to look down a little bit. They may not show it, maybe a little patronizing attitude, but they feel a certain superiority over someone who's a Baal Tshuva, you know, like a giant from lately. But the truth is, let's be honest, isn't the real reason, by and large, or a significant part of the reason why we are keep the Torah is because that's the way he's been raised? Well, the majority of people, it's basically that's the way he's been raised. How much thought have people, have they really chosen? How much thought has the average religious person really given to whether he should be religious or not? I'm not taking away credit. I'm trying to put things into perspective. I'm not taking away credit. Because you had Bechira, obviously. You had a choice. And I'm sure each person had their own temptations. And I'm sure each person had their own battle. I don't mean to belittle anybody that's practicing mitzvot and so forth. I don't mean to belittle. But I do mean that you should be cognizant of the fact that a large part of it has to do with societal. I mean, you're raised that way. It was second nature to you. And to keep Shabbos, of course, we try to convince people that keeping Shabbos is not that difficult as you imagine. Yeah, it's not that difficult for us because it's always part of our life. Every Friday afternoon we get ready for Shabbos and you know, it's no big deal. And eating kosher and not eating tripe. It would be probably psychologically impossible, I would say, for all of us to even eat tripe. I think it would be probably psychologically impossible. I don't mean it's too crazy, because the more psychologically difficult it is, the less it is a moral achievement, you realize. But it is a moral achievement. I just mean to say, though, but for many people, the psychological, and it should be that way, I mean, of course, but the psychological is a very powerful factor. It's part of your upbringing. You've got your family, you've got your friends, you've got your society. For you to deviate would be a very difficult thing to do. But somebody who is just the opposite and who's changed completely, that's the luck of Shabbat Shalom. It's just a person that chose to be Jewish. Chose, really made a real choice. Exercised their Bechira. Had experienced all the other way. Gave it all up. That seems to me like a much higher level. And the truth is, it gave it to us. I think there'd be a certain prejudice towards the bear in most people. I'm not people in this room right now, but most people in most Jewish society at large. I know for a fact, cases where people, you know, very religious people, Orthodox and learned people, come into the home, and there was a case of a shidduch with, right, shidduch would be the test. The test of how prejudiced or unprejudiced you are with a ger. And this is a ger, the case in point was the person who had converted, was a ger emes, had not converted because of a shidduch, converted years before, and was a true convert. And married, of course, a religious person. And the parents were a bit upset. And the reason was because, what's the yichus? And someone explained, but the truth is that this person is, someone mentioned they want their gut to make a little fuss, but of course it wasn't appropriate for the situation, and explained that this person is on a higher level than all of us. That this individual came from a Gentile background and chose to be Jewish and totally committed. So, for all of these reasons, it's very difficult to deal with this kind of a rashi. That the feel of a tzaddik, ben tzaddik, seems to be undermining everything that we are saying. And as a matter of fact, by the way, you should realize that there's a mitzvah, v'ahavta l'rech, you shall love fellow Jew. Re'ech means your friend, your fellow Jew, as yourself. And we went into that, discussed what exactly that entails. But the Rambam says that, what about a ger? Does the mitzvah of the ahavta l'rech kamocha apply to a ger, a convert? He says, if when you perform the mitzvah of avos ager, it involves two mitzvahs. One, because he's re'echa, he's your friend, fellow Jew. And secondly, it says the ahavta l'rech ager. There's a special mitzvah, a special theme, a mitzvah, a positive commandment to love the ger, because he separated himself from everything, from all the support in his life, and he's chosen to be, put himself completely under the wings of God's screen, so to speak, under the protection of God. So that shows that when you, the mitzvah of loving the ger entails two mitzvahs. It's a greater fulfillment. It says that God, the Ohe ger, and God loves the ger. So there's a special love directed at the person just because of the ger, aside from the fact that he's keeping the system. So the rest of us are keeping the system. So if you're keeping the system, you're on a high level, you're entitled to many things. But the ger, above and beyond that, has the capacity to separate himself from all the influences in his life and to embrace the system purely out of love. There was no compulsion. All right, that I think is, I'm trying to make the question as strong as I possibly can. And again, it leads us, if that is the case, if we're going to, for whatever reason, find some type of a flaw in someone who's a tzaddik, but because they're a ben Russia, the child of a Russia, then what are we going to do about Avraham Avinu? The whole system of Yahadis, right? Mugging Avraham. What about Avraham Avinu? Was Avraham Avinu, was he like, in this case, was he like Yitzchak? Or was he more like Rivka? Or wasn't Avraham Avinu tzaddik, ben Russia? Was he tzaddik in front of a Russia? So that's the basic question that I want to address. And I want to answer it from, the same way I told you in perspective though. I mentioned the case of Avraham, and as I just said, Avraham is a situation where it is, and also we'll see, this relates to Tzila, by the way. Yeah, Avraham is someone who's a tzaddik, but he's been Russia. Okay. Now, let's see how this idea will fit in a different, slightly different context. Go back now to Yud Beis. This is in Lech Lecha. In Lech Lecha Yud Beis, that's when God tells Abraham to leave his homeland, his father's house, the land that I will show you. Take a look at the passage. The Esra is a gadol. All the promises God gives Abraham, I'll make you into a great nation, and I'll bless you. I'll make your name great, and you will be a blessing. And I'll bless those who bless you, and those who curse you will be cursed. And through you will be blessed all the families of the earth. Tremendous blessings that God heaps upon Avraham. Now Rashi gives various interpretations, because each statement, each promise, has a different interpretation. Now please turn to Rashi. It's in the middle of Rashi, Vayei Bracha. And you see where Rashi's Devar Acher, another interpretation? The Eschol Gadol, I'll make you into a great nation. What does that mean? Zeshe Omrim Elokei Avram. That's a reference to that, well, we say, the God of Avram. Davarecha, and I'll bless you. Zeshe Omrim Elokei Yitzchak. That's referring to what we say, God of Yitzchak. Lagad Lashemecha, and I'll make your name great. Zeshe Omrim Elokei Yaakov. That is with reference to what we say, God of Yaakov. So what's Rashi referring to over here? An interesting phenomenon. That the promise that God gave was something very unique. That God would allow his name to be associated, identified, with three people. That's the only three people that God allows his name to be associated with are Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Now that's part of the Shmon Esrei. Of course, this is a reference to the Shmon Esrei, the first bracha, right? Elokeinu, Elokei Avinu, our God, and God of our fathers. Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. Of course, the question arises, why is it that God allows his name to be associated only with, what's the concept of the behind this, and why only these three? Like somebody asked me, why not Elokei Moshe? You know that Moshe, when Moshe asked God at the snare, and they were asking, what is your name? But that's true, but then Elokei, tell him Elokei Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, the God of Abraham. Insofar as God's name is known by those with whom he's associated with, it's the God of Abraham, God of Isaac, and God of Jacob. First of all, what does it mean, God of Abraham? If you believe in God, so it's your God too. It's everybody's God. What is the idea? This is a very important concept. What is the idea of God of Abraham? And why only these three? But there's one more point that you have to answer though, before you finish. How does the bracha end? Magen Avraham. Why is that? Because once we've established that there isn't a thing as God's name being associated, and then we've established that it's only these three, that these are the three people, so then how should the blessing end? Brachas Hashem, Elokei Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov. That's where the bracha should end. But the bracha does not end that way. Rachis Yachal Yichosim B'kulon. That I might think that you should end the bracha with all three of them. Talmud Lomar now says Vayeh Bracha, you will be a Bracha, Bechacha Osnim, with you they end the Bracha, below Behem, and not with them. So this is a very interesting kind of an idea. There's a number of points. First of all, what is the idea of God associating his name with people? What does that mean? And then of course, why these three? But if that's the case, basing ourselves on the concept that we've established over here about the tzaddik, ben tzaddik, with all these kinds of factors and unkind of all these different factors, if anything, if we're going to talk about the chesima, the ending, we should speak about the one who's on the highest possible level, in general terms, in terms of yichus. So then, Yitzchak is the tzaddik ben tzaddik, and Yaakov is the tzaddik ben tzaddik ben tzaddik. The chut hamashuach, the triple threat, right. Low Meher, there won't be. If that is the case, B'chach Osen, with you. And that is in the bracha of Shmon Esrei. Not to say it's exactly identical to the issue over here, but I think that it's something which should be elucidated. And that's what I'd like to focus my attention on. And after we analyze this, I'd like to go back and explain why the seal of Yitzchak is somehow superior. Okay? So what is the concept over here? What's the concept of God's name? We say this in Sila every day. God of Abraham, God of Isaac, God of Jacob, and we say it, but what does it mean? Why do we have such a thing? Yes? It's a bit of a problem, because there is a certain greatness in just choosing God, the real choice, like Avram did. But then you have a child. Now what are you supposed to do? Raise the child free? So, when you raise a child free without any instruction, later on when he begins to think, he can go through the same process, and perhaps he'll come to that level of choosing God of his own volition. We say, but we don't say that. No one's going to do that. We raise the child By the way, I don't mean to imply that we'd be better off not raising our children in the right environment. Of course. Of course. We have to do that, and we should do that. So, Yitzchak is clearly raised. Yitzchak had choice. You know that Yitzchak had choice. And you know that Yaakov had choice because people that were raised in the very same home made other choices, as we know. Esav, exactly. Esav had the same upbringing as Yaakov. How could it be? Just diametrical opposites, which is the same perfect upbringing. So it just goes to show you that even with the best upbringing, so you can feel too bad. You know, as parents, don't feel overly proud, don't feel overly guilty if things don't work out the way you want. Upbringing, you do a certain amount, but you can't bypass the hero. So, yes, you're right, I agree with you, that Yitzchak exercised Bechira. So Yitzchak was the product of a Jewish environment, so to speak, you know. He was raised to be the way he was. It worked out properly, and so was Yaakov. There is a concept over here, though. You're on the right track. You're a lawyer. You see also, you mentioned before, by the snare, there were two different names that were given. The name of Ekya Asher Ekya, which is the objective concept that we're supposed to have of God, insofar as we can have any concept of God. We can't have a positive concept of God, a true concept of God. But the idea which comes closest in the human framework to approximating the realistic notion of God, that's the idea of God. But then, he gave him another way, another name. There are two names. There's the name of Ekya, the concept of God, but that's not sufficient. Because a person, to be in a state where you have a proper relationship with God, entails two things. One is that you have to believe that God is one, the proper idea of God. Not an idolatrous notion of God. But even a person can be a monotheist and still be an idolater. The two are not incongruous. It is how you choose to relate to God. It's the manner by which you relate to God, one's relationship to God. If you relate to God via projecting primitive emotions onto God, and a whole system whereby you imagine that God is sort of the notion of a protector and so on and so forth, the proper relationship to God was established by Abraham, how a person is supposed to relate to God, and that he relates to God through getting close to God by appreciation of the wisdom of God and by living a certain kind of a life. It's the whole life which was worked out by Abraham. That's the Elokei. God associates his name with three people because they had the proper idea of God and the implications, how a person should live his life based upon that idea. Now, why only those three? Why only those three? It doesn't mean to say that other people didn't have the same thing, but everyone else, after those three, you see, they elaborated the three. There are three different foundations. They elaborated this idea. The idea was discovered by Avraham Avinu. He was the discoverer of the idea, and his life, he's an Av, because his life represents the perfection of one of the elements, one of the aspects involved in one's relationship to God. Yitzchak, all three are originals. Like you said, Yitzchak chose, and Yitzchak identified with the same idea of God, but he exemplified a different, he illustrated a different element of this type of perfection. Because we're talking about now how you live your life based upon the proper relationship to God. And Yaakov represents the third element. And that's it. Once you have those three, you see, the idea has achieved its completion. Like many ideas, like a system of thought, so to speak, usually you have a discoverer, but the discoverer can only bring it up to a certain point. Then if he's followed by someone on a very high level, this person will take the thing and bring it to another phase of development, and then perhaps to the final phase of development, now the system is established. Everybody else will now, once the system is established, these three establish the system. They have to be viewed as the foundations. We see that by Moshe Rabbeinu, by the seal of Moshe Rabbeinu. When God wants to destroy the Melechei Ego. And his prayer was, Rashi explains, that if a chair of three legs can't stand before you in your time of anger, how can a chair of one leg? The three legs, of course, are the Father's. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. The chair is supported by the legs. The legs represent the foundation. The chair is the Jewish people. So afterwards, there's various combinations. I mean, we relate back to the others. Yeah, I want to elucidate what each one stands for now. I mean, we should have a concept of the others, the individuality of the others. What was the individual virtue that each one represented? Oh, but they all partake of all three, you see? Of course, the perfect individual partakes of all of these different elements, but each one brought one of them into focus and represents something to the world. Now, just for starters, we'll compare Avraham and Yaakov. Interestingly enough, as I'll say, that who was the choice of the others? Yaakov was the seer Sheba Avos. And he represents the element of Emes. Titein Emes Yaakov, ascribed Emes, truth, to Yaakov. Chesed Avraham. When we see Avraham manifesting himself to the world, it's in the framework of chesed, compassion. And the compassion took on many forms. His whole life was a life. After he discovered the true idea, his whole life, as we said many times, was a life of chesed. But by virtue of the fact that he sought to be adopted. Why? Romanus Yitzhaka. His objective was to save the world. Not, but of course, saving the world in the true sense. Not like a lot of people have the idea of saving the world. But that's a form of psychosis. But in his case, it was based upon reality. By communicating to them the true ideas, but not just to people that he dealt with, but to set up a system, to perpetuate a system so that the ideas would always exist for all future generations. That was his objective. Now that is the greatest form of chesed that you can possibly have. And in the course of doing so, he didn't shun ordinary hospitality. We see that in the case of the messengers. He sat outside his tent. Even when he was in pain, he was recuperating from the bris milah. But still in all, he was involved in the physical activities. They even described, why did the Torah have to get into the bag? To describe the fact that he ran, he ran to get to one of the animals to prepare. He oversaw every aspect of the preparation of the food. Why? Because he realized that was necessary to establish a relationship with people in order to get them to be willing to listen to his ideas. Now, if we should say that Avram represents the ultimate expression of the Amida of Fese, but what about Emes? Doesn't he also, I mean, it was all based upon Emes. And if Yaakov is involved in Emes, but wasn't that Avram? Wait a minute, Avram was involved in Emes. What do we mean when we say Kitein Emes Yaakov? Yaakov represents Emes. And Avram represents Chesed. It seems to me that Avram represents Emes too. Did nothing get started with that Emes? The whole thing was because it was true. He discovered the truth. And the whole Chesed of Avraham was a Chesed Shel Emes. It was all, that was the essence of the Chesed. Emes. So what do we mean now? And in what sense is Yaakov more choice? More for, on a higher level, so to speak. That's what I'd like to understand. And then we'll try and take up Yitzchak. I know Yitzchak is a bit problematical, but I have an idea for that. But why would you give greater credit to Yaakov with regard to the virtue of Emes than to Avraham? I mean, he has to personify it.
You just have to...
I'm saying differently. It's not just... Yeah, but Avram also personified because he went around teaching. It says, Vayukah B'Shem HaRashem. He went around teaching everybody. If anything, that was... Yeah, Yaakov, excuse me. All right, okay. Bringing him in the Shemesh, but Yaakov did not. It would seem... Well, he taught it to his father. He taught too, but he didn't deal with the world as much in terms of teaching. He did not seem to deal with the world. Because Avram really taught the world. He tried to teach... the soul that he had acquired in Haran, and then in Canaan he traversed the land and he taught wherever he went. He was more of a teacher. Of course, yeah, I agree that the chesed is prominent, but the teaching aspect, why are we negating that? And we're saying that for some reason now, I want to maintain that there is a difference between the emes of Avraham and the emes of Yaakov. Of course, both had Emma, and both had Chesed. There's no question about it. But there's a difference.
But what
number of different sources here. When, Yaakov had to leave his home, of course, and so he went, where did he go to? He went back to Haran, right? To his grandfather's house. And, his encounter with Rachel. He meets Rachel, and he was emotionally affected. It says, and he cried when he saw her. And then it says, interesting passage, Vayaged Yaakov l'Rachel, Yaakov said to Rachel, Ki achi avihu, that he's the brother of her father. That's how he described himself, the brother of her father. Her father was Lavan. He was not Lavan. He wasn't Lavan's brother. But Rashi, on the plain side, I mean, a brother could be like a relative. Okay. One second, we're going to drift. The Chivan Rivka ho, but he was also the son of Rivka. But Tarat Batagi Lavia, so she ran and told her father. See, this deep implication. Here's a Rashi points out. It's a measure, it's not plain shot. But he chose his words carefully. When he chose to describe himself as the brother of your father and the son of Rivka, he meant as follows. There's a deeper implication. The measure says, in the Ramato, ba, if your father will act towards me with deceit, gamani achav b'ramor, I'll be his brother in the deceit. I'll respond in kind, and I'll be just as deceitful as he is. V'im adam kashirhu, if he's a good person, if he's sincere, gamani ben Rivka, then I choose to identify myself as the son of Rivka, achoso, his sister Hakshera. So, very interesting message over there. But what kind of MS is this? It's an interesting kind of MS. I'm prepared to play the game either way. If he wants to be nice, I'll be nice. But if he wants to be treacherous, I'll be his brother in treachery. Yeah, that's MS. You see, that's where I... That's the quality of MS. It seems to go against the emotion. But how could Yaakov do things like this? Yaakov... Your point is well taken, man, by the way. The nisyonos that Yaakov experienced all related to the character of Emes, bringing out the true quality of Emes. They both, Avram practiced Emes, and Yaakov practiced Emes, and they both have the same system of ideas. But there's a difference. I would say, as an analogy, it's the difference between someone who's relating to the world as a professor in a college, let's say. A school, you have a school. You're a teacher. And all around you, they're teaching false ideas. And your whole purpose in life is to tear down the false ideas and to teach the true ideas. And that takes tremendous greatness. To be intellectual, you're involved in an intellectual battle. But the battle is essentially in the realm that you have a certain... But you do have a forum. You have a podium to speak from. Now, at first, Avram had to escape. But once he escaped from Haran, then his life wasn't in danger anymore. So he has to do battle. But it's different. You're basically dealing in the realm of abstract ideas. You have to have a tremendous ability to relate to people intellectually and to break down false ideas and to be able to prove your ideas. That's a tremendous thing. So your whole life is involved in MS. But you do have a certain vantage point. And that is that you are the teacher. He practiced chesed. So they came to him, they listened, they didn't have to accept what he said. But that's one thing. Now imagine another situation. It's one thing to start a movement, and we're just discussing ideas. We have a new movement, political, you know, for what the proper ideology, a Torah ideology that Israel should be run by. Okay? So it's one thing to elucidate it on an academic level and to prove why it's correct and to disprove all the false ideas that motivate. That's one thing. See, at that stage you can still maintain a certain amount of purity because you're not involved in the nitty-gritty world of politics. It's another thing to take an ideology and actually get involved in the world of politics and still retain the honor. That's a completely different kind of a challenge. See, it's one thing to sit back and say that it shouldn't be run this way, Israel, and it should be run according to the Torah. So you can sit back and give a shiur and you can explain how what they did is incorrect because it's not moral and so on and so forth. And you can be very pure, it's very nice because all this is being done from the vantage point of an American classroom. But it's quite another thing, and you can criticize the religious party too for what they did because you can show it's not perfect. But it's quite another thing to actually enter into the arena and to have to confront all the different challenges. Now you want to go into politics, let's have political movements. We could have political ideas. And it's one thing in the classroom. But when you're out there in the real world and you want to fight for the maintenance of the system, that's a completely different ballgame. Now you can't corrupt the system. You can't compromise your principles, but you're going to have to make compromises, but you can't compromise your principles. And you're going to have to play the game, and you're going to have to do certain things. You're going to have to do Ramos, but Ramos, it depends. You're using deceit. Sometimes you have to use deceit. Sometimes you have to lie. See, Yaakov couldn't lie at the very beginning. That was his design. The idea of going to his father and pretending that he was Esav was repugnant to him. And he was afraid. How can I do anything like this? It's a lie. But his mother, who was from a different situation, from a different environment, she said, no, I like your love company. This is what you have to do. That's a whole new way of living. A lot of people shun the whole of that whole thing, and they can only function in the realm of the campus or whatever, the yeshiva. And that's not a criticism. They just don't have the capacity. What do I think? And I'm not saying that Avram didn't have the capacity. That's not the point. The point is that wasn't his job. At his time in history, his mission at that point was to elaborate. Yet he didn't have to deal. That's true. But that, I know. But the whole essence of Yaakov's life, was he was out there. Every phase of his life, he had to deal with the problems. The problems of maintaining MS, and that was his tzila when he left. If he'll return to his father's house, showing. That's because he realized. And to be involved in all political situations, you see Moshe argued with God for 7 days by the bush. Shlachno b'yatishlach, somebody else. He did not want to get involved in the world of politics. Because it's a tremendously difficult thing. Your understanding of truth, when you apply it, when you're living in a situation where people are trying to kill you and break you down, and you have to, in every case, you have to know exactly where to draw the line. How does truth operate in this situation, even though I may be doing something which in a different context would be a lie? Sometimes telling a lie is the truth. That's what it comes down to. Now, how many people have such a capacity, have such a mastery and such an objectivity and such a rationality to be able to function in the world of tolerance and be an idealist, a practical idealist? I'd like to just, how many do we know? We know tremendous idealists. But these idealists have shunned the world. They're not going to be part of politics. I wouldn't go into politics. They don't want to do so. And to a certain extent, means people that are involved in yeshivas, so they sort of look down on the pulpit rabbis. They're out there, that's politics. They're compromised and all that. Now, look, in all honesty, you have to be fair. So, it's nice. And the pulpit rabbis, well, maybe some of them have been. I'm not defending anybody. There's people have made compromises in the wrong area. But there's a different type of an act and a skill. When you're out there, you speak to some people that are out there on the frontiers of Judaism. And it's not like New York City where it's every shul has machitza and you have lakadosh. And to win people over, you're in a situation where if I could make a certain maneuver, and there is a hetta for it, it may not be the best, you're dealing with a completely different situation. Now, a person, you got to be very, very careful. Is he being totally, totally honest? Is it really true? Or is he giving into a certain emotion that he wants to be a success? That's the challenge. But you have to have compassion for people that are out there fighting the battles. It's very nice when you're in a yeshiva and all you have is a situation of everybody who's dedicated. It's very easy to be completely demanding. And of course, whatever, any chumrah you want. The more chumrah, the better. But when you're in a totally different world, you have to have a certain compassion for those people who are out there in the trenches. That requires a completely different skill. And the person who can master MS and apply it in that situation has a greater mastery over MS. Because these same people, were they to go out there, couldn't do it. And they'd be broken by it. And as I said, that's why they shun that world. That's why many people, idealists, will shun the world of practicality, and because they realize that they can't handle it. All right, but that's not the highest level. The highest level is Yaakov. He's the idealist, and that wasn't by. And he had to fight against his own nature. His own Yaakov ish tam Yosef Ohalim. His basic desire was to be in the tent. He did not want to be out there fighting political battles, but that was his destiny. And that was necessary for the system. You couldn't. That was the third leg of the system. Because the Yardis is not going to be able to triumph only in the yeshiva. You have to be out there in the battlefield. And the truth of the matter is that that would be. I'm not getting into. I'm not making any kind of a evaluation of the various religious parties. what they do, and I don't even have all the information. But the truth of the matter is, that is, to have a religious party, to form a political party, and to actually fight to advance the goals of Torah in the political arena, which is where it's going to be done, is a very worthwhile, noble endeavor. Of course, if you go ahead and do so and you become corrupt, then you failed. But that's what's necessary. If it's done correctly, then it's a tremendous critical sin. Because it's nice to sit back and preach. You have tremendous luxury as long as you're not out there in the real world. Once you're out there in the real world, you face tremendous challenges, but that's the ultimate test. That's why, as I say, in a general sense, Avraham Avinu was involved, of course, in Emmet, but in his time, in his situation, it was this, right, he was, exactly, he had a certain position of power. He maintained an academy. And people listened to him, and that was a tremendous thing. He elucidated the ideas. But he did not have to go out there and fight the political battles of implementation that Yaakov was constantly involved with Lavan and with Sam, and then the situation with the sons. In every situation, he had to apply, he had to retain the true idea, but what method is required in this situation? That's the ultimate in terms of that. Question, of course, is now, what about Yitzchak? Yitzchak is very difficult to pin down. Somebody asked recently, Shalom Zucker recently. Somebody was asking, we see every one, Avram, what he did, Yaakov, what did Yitzchak do? What qualifies Yitzchak? Why, what's he great? And Lori's saying, so yeah, that's what it says. Because of Lavan Garchi, he was Tari's Mitzvah Shamarchi. But he kept Tari's Mitzvah living together with Lavan. That was the ultimate test. And so let's turn now to Yitzchak. There are two sources. One I think you're familiar with, one that I don't think you're familiar with. What did Yitzchak represent to the world? Yeah, let's see though. Yitzchak, we know about Yitzchak that he couldn't leave the land. We know that his father sent Eliezer to fetch a wife him, get a wife him, and that he told him, right, he told him that he was under no circumstances would he take him out of the land. Now at that point we don't know exactly why, but it becomes apparent in the next sentence in Toldos. In Toldos it says that there was a famine in the land, aside from the original famine that took place in the land in the time of Avram. And Yitzchak went to Rabbi Melech Swish in Gerar. He went to Gerar, which is part of Eretz Israel. And God said to him, God appeared to him and said, "I'll carry him to Rama. Do not go down to Mitzrayim. Shon Barit, dwell in the land that's the Omer Elecha." Now Rashi on that says, I'm sure you're all familiar with this, "I'll carry the Shema, so I had died to all of Eretz Yisrael, his intention was to go down to Egypt from our Shiar Davim, and his father had gone down, he may arrive in the days of the famine. Come along, tell his Baruch Hu, so I said to him, I'll carry the Shema. So I said, Ola Tamima, you are a complete, whole Ola, a covered Ola. The end Chutla Arat Kedaila, and Chutla, that is to say, any other place but Eretz Yisrael is not fit for you. Now, Ola, as you know, is a sacrifice. It's a carbon, all of which is consumed on the altar. As opposed to other sacrifices, which part of it is on the altar, but part of it is permitted to be consumed, eaten by people. So the Ola is completely to God. That's the idea. You are an Ola, but Tamima. You're sort of like Tamim. What's that? Complete. And Chutla is not fit for you. What does that mean? What does that mean? Now, as Laurie explained, he said many times that Yitzchak was a different type of a personality. He was a different type of a personality. In a sense, you see, for example, that he was fooled by Esau. How do we explain that? He was fooled by Esau, but Rivka was not. Now, Rivka was on a very high level, of course, very special individual, so, but Yitzchak too. Yitzchak was extremely intelligent. How was he fooled? Somebody want, sorry? The way we've interpreted was that he was an individual who was completely removed from this world.
she was so involved in the metaphysical that he couldn't, he didn't have it in his nature to deal with people in situations. Sometimes, as he said, sometimes a person is so perfected that he can't see the evil in others. It's, it happens to be true that to a large extent, people who are extremely perfected and kind and so forth, they tend to be naive in certain ways because that's just the way they are. They don't think, where do we get our insights into the evil of others from? We know our own emotions, we sort of sense. And that, that when sometimes you're very serious, you can pick up on somebody else. Yeah, you know exactly what they're up to. And then you think, and then when they ask you, you tell your friend, I know. And then when they come to see you, oh, you're a real genius. You're not a real genius. It's basically your own emotions. Because you have the same emotion they have. And you sense it. A person can always sense it. And you sense that they're not doing this for altruistic motives. It's an ego thing. Watch, you'll see. It's not because you're such a genius. And even psychologists, when you're involved in psychology, a lot of psychology is a study of, you know, aspects, study feeling and so forth, but you have to have a good intuition. And intuition is basically your, well, every psychologist has to study themselves first, you know, to know their own emotions. Anyway, so Yitzhak was saying, oh, look at Nima. He was basically so perfected, so removed from this world. Now, what's that time? So what does that have to do with his role as an eye? Okay, if anything, what we've been saying, we've been talking about how the Avos impacted on the world. Avram is impacting on the world as a man of, he's a teacher, teaching the true ideas. Yaakov is implementation of the system in the political arena. What about Yitzhak? Where do you see an indication of? Sure, give me a source. Tovos goes through the story about Yitzhak, what happened to him in the land of the Christians. And he went through the same thing as father did. That he said that Rivka was his sister, right? And he gets to a scrap with Avimelech. I don't know if there's an argument for that and so forth. Then it says in Pesach Gimel, Vayigo Ish, the man became great. Vayelech Holoch Vagadel. And then he proceeded to get greater and greater. Ah, Tigal Omeo. He totally became exceedingly great. That's in Yigimel. Chafah of Yigimel. It describes the process. Three steps. He became big. Then he proceeded to go and become greater until he became exceedingly great. He got on the oath. And Rashi says a very amazing thing. A very amazing thing. What does it mean? Got on the oath. Now you own him. They would say, people said, zero pardosh of Yitzchak. They prefer the dung of the donkeys of Yitzchak, below Kaspo Zahavo Shlavimah, to the gold and silver of Avimah. Now, let's interpret that. What's going on over here? Let's make some sense out of this one. Okay? See, certain Rashis become popular. And everybody's aware of that. This Rashi is just as significant. Yeah. In other words, what Yitzchak represented was the extent to which a person following this idea, Avraham introduced a whole new world of existence. But the essence of man is not a behemoth. But the essence of man is not an animal. The essence of man is his divine image. And the capacity to perfect that element in man. But if you follow that path, you improve and you reach higher and higher levels. You enter into a different realm. But man is a being who starts out physical and sensual, and he can reach the stars. He can reach the highest possible level. Now, the individual that represents that capacity to separate oneself from the instinctual and to be involved, totally, that's Ola Tamima, total, complete, perfect, whole. That representation is found to the greatest degree in Yitzchak. And you want to know something? That's what people respect him. You think they respect him, I mean, we have different types of images, you know, model, role models, ego ideals in our society. So, of course, you have the popular ones, the ones that make the newspapers, the lifestyles of the rich and the famous. Right? But those people don't make a big impression. And, first of all, very often, you see you discover corruption, like with Michael Jackson, you know, the big hero, and all of a sudden, it's all based upon illusion anyway. It's based upon illusion. It's all what you're projecting onto the person. But even so, that's not the ultimate hero. The ultimate hero, and it's something which even people, amazing, even people that are not involved in the intellectual values, they will sense that. I read somewhere recently, in some reading, I think of a magazine, they were interviewing he lost the championship, so Bo, Riddick Bo was the champion. When he was so tempted, they interviewed him, you know, I don't know why, whatever, but something struck me. They asked him, like, who he would most like to be like. Who would he be, if he had the choice of anyone, who he admired the most? If he could be like anybody in the world, in history, who would he be like? He mentioned one person with a finger, like, and Einstein. If you could have Einstein, the brain of Einstein. That struck me, like, what would he do with it? I mean, why? How would that help him? Now, the point of it is, though, it tells you, now, because every person recognizes that the highest element in himself is the brain. I've said this many times. No matter what a person does, no matter what field he's involved in, if the person doesn't have the slightest thing to do with knowledge or ideas, the biggest insult is to call a person stupid. The biggest praise, the person is proud. Say a person successful in business, or a person is a great singer, or a person is beautiful, handsome. So you tell them, of course, if they feel good, you tell them you look great. But if a person says something, you say, wow, that was brilliant. Much more significant. Person would, you know, between two compliments, you know, you look good and you're brilliant, any person would prefer that. Because the person naturally senses that that's the higher part of it. That's the real greatness. So everybody will respect an Einstein. Because you know that you may not live your life. That's the tragedy. The tragedy is you don't follow through on that basic understanding and live your life in accordance with that. But at a certain point in one's psyche, everybody respects that. And that's what Yitzchak represents. Ola Kamima. And that's why Avimelech represented the other type of lifestyle, the silver and gold. He was a big ego ideal. But Yitzchak had such a tremendous impact upon the psyche that better, any type of anything which was associated with Yitzchak, even Zero Pardasa, that is, something which basically would be disgusting. But since it was associated with this man, I prefer to have that than all the gold and silver of Avimelech. That means to say that he had a tremendous aura. So that's a tremendous effect upon the world. Interestingly enough, so Yitzchak performed his role as an ass just by virtue of what he made himself into. Not necessarily by virtue of what he accomplished. You see, there are two types of hero. There's the hero in terms of an accomplishment. He brings about a certain change through a certain type of an activity. But then we have, and as you have mentioned, then we have someone like the Vilna Gaon, who no one ever saw. He slept maybe 2.5 hours a night and never left his room. Kept had the shade. He learned by candlelight. No distraction whatsoever. Only had a few students that had access to him. He was not a public figure whatsoever. And he had one of the greatest impacts upon society. People used to say, just to know that there's a Vilna Gaon, keep them going. Keep them in the right path. Those were the three. Okay? Avram represents the perfection in terms of chesed. Yaakov, the perfection in terms of emes, as we've explained. Emes, when you're applying it, you're out there in the political world. And Yitzchak represents a different thing. The perfection in terms of the good. To what extent a person can embark upon this good and leave the change of the instinctual and to be totally involved in the orbit of the world of knowledge of God. Those were the three. And that completes the entire picture.
What was it
for? No. It's not Chachma. It's a certain type of, represents the ultimate perfection of man, the nature of man, the Tzelem Elokim. Since there's the capacity of the Tzelem Elokim to remove itself completely.
So why do
you think it's going to happen? Now what's the Chachma? So now I would say, these are the three. These are the three pillars of our people. That's what they represent. So Chachos means without, I would think that you should conclude with all three. No, Avraham. Yeah, what does that mean? That means that represents a certain uniqueness. That it's possible that someone will be the originator of the system. He'll make the breakthrough. Now the next person that comes along will go beyond him, and possible that the person that came after him will reach a higher level. and will reach ideas that the originator wouldn't have seen. But nevertheless, the originator has something which is in you. In other words, Yitzchak got it from Avraham, and having taken it from Avraham, or even Yaakov got it from both of them, could take it to a higher degree. But that doesn't mean to say that he could have discovered himself. There's a separate greatness in the capacity of a person to discover something which goes against the complete side of society. In other words, he came from darkness into light. Nobody else ever experienced that. Total darkness. He had no teacher, the Rambam said. He had no teacher. He was raised. He was raised as an idolater. All of his influences, all of his teachers were idolaters, and he had absolutely no helper. No influence, no teacher. No one else in history ever did anything like that. Every other pioneer, every other great thinker, Einstein was a great pioneer, relativity, but he didn't discover scientific method. I mean, he thought he had teachers. It's just that he took all of that and he applied it. That itself is tremendous. But when there's no, for a person who's living in a world where everybody's thinking like a primitive, and he discovers scientific thinking, that's a different type of discovery. You see? So Avraham's capacity was unique. The ability to activate one's Selim Elohim and to be able to attach it purely to the truth. He was purely attached to the truth. And to the extent that all the world is on one side and he was on the other side, that's a unique thing, never to happen again. That's what Bechachos said. Now that's the case precisely because he came from a situation of darkness and he was able to move out of that and to go to the truth. Now let's get back to the case of Yitzchak. So Yitzchak was being with Saul and Issa. So his tefillah was superior. Why was his tefillah superior? Because he was a tzaddik, ben tzaddik. But why? He's just no b'chachosin with Avram. Avram was the originator. He came from darkness. Why isn't that greater? The answer is like this. In tefillah, apparently, it means like this. There's two things. The tefillah, if we're going to measure the greatness of the person, the greatness of the achievement, so the achievement of Avraham is the greatest. When it comes to who the blessing, God of Abraham, God of Isaac, God of Jacob, but it ends up, without Avraham, there's no Isaac and Jacob, so therefore it's God of Abraham. That's how it ends. The essential, in those three, the essential one is God of Abraham, because they were talking about the nature of the achievement. If you're talking about the... Now, when it comes to tefillah, in tefillah, the important thing is not the greatness of the achievement. We look at for whom is it a greater achievement to be turning to God? For this person or for that person? That's not the factor. Apparently, in tefillah, it means to say that it's a natural thing. How does it work? That a person is misfouled, he prays for something, and as a result of his praying for something, he is answered. It means to say that as a result, it's a natural phenomenon that as a result of going through the ideas of tefillah, he reaches a certain level. It effectuates a new level in the individual, and on that level he's worthy of God relating to him. It's a natural kind of a thing. It's not that as we think, I'm a good person, so God will, if I ask God, he'll give me. So then you're talking in terms of for who is it a bigger achievement. That's not the factor. The factor in tefillah is the level of the individual that he achieves as a result of his tefillah. That has to take into consideration the level he's at in terms of his closeness to God. Now, as far as that's concerned, I think that's what Rashi is pointing out. That a tzaddik ben tzaddik has an advantage. It doesn't mean to say that he's a greater person. But in terms of his closeness, he's Yitzchak, Yaakov. They were able to take the foundation and bring it to a higher level. If we're talking about the level, so then the person who comes after has the advantage. The tzaddik ben Russia doesn't have that unique opportunity because they have to spend a tremendous amount of energy divesting themselves from the false ideas and fighting against certain emotions. But the one who's raised in the proper framework from youth, that's a tremendous advantage. From youth he was involved in the true system and he builds upon the correct ideas. And he doesn't have to fight against all of his emotions because right from youth they were directed towards the good. So if you're talking about the level that the person can reach, then that's why, of course, we want to raise our children in the proper way. By doing so, are you depriving them of
perhaps having the benefit of being a Balshuva. And being in the place of a Balshuva stands, ain't trying to call me Yochalama. That happens to be true. But that doesn't mean to say that we should give a, we're going to set up a system to give everybody the opportunity to be a Balshuva. That's not the way it's supposed to be. You have to set up a situation to give the maximum opportunity to be a, not a Balshuva, to be a target. And it's true that this person may not partake of that grade. We don't know how this person, we don't know how we would be. I don't know how we would be if we were in that situation, whether we'd have the capacity to choose or not. But nevertheless, what the important thing is that we have to follow the good. If this is the good, then you don't subject yourself to a situation where you'll be forced to choose it, but maybe you won't choose it. That doesn't make any sense. You see? So that's what the idea. Well, Rashi is saying over here about the fear that God answered Yitzchak, it's because the level that a Yitzchak can reach is greater than the level at a bas, all things being equal, of course. Certainly much better to have a situation where a child is raised from youth in the right direction, with the right teaching, with the right influence, and so on and so forth, because they can maximize their potential and reach the highest level. But unfortunately, it doesn't always work that way. The system isn't perfect, so people are lost. Then, if you'll tell me an individual that came from a bad situation and was able to utilize their own strength and to turn away from evil and turn to good, that's a greater achievement. If you're going to measure achievement, that's a much greater achievement. You see? That's why when we're talking about who the bracha and God is associating his name with, we're talking about in terms of the greatest achievement. That's Avraham. Because without Avraham, there wouldn't be a Yitzchak, there wouldn't be a Yaakov. That's why it's the Chachosim. When you're talking about being answered in Tefillah, who can reach a closer degree in terms of their closeness to God, through the knowledge of God, than the Ben Tzadik HaZadik Nevi. That's what it is.